Hey, State Streeters, we're back in your feeds with a special season of State Street.
And you may be thinking, but Sean, it's summer. This is no time to be talking about the 2024 election.
Think again, friends.
If you really want a voice and a say in who's going to be your representative, now is the time to start paying attention.
It's the primary election, baby. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. And we're bringing the summer heat with some juicy election coverage.
The primary is June 25th. So over the next 4 weeks, we've got what you need to understand what the heck is happening and why it matters. There are important seats up for grabs at the federal, state, and local levels.
We can't cover all of those races in this short season. If you want in-depth coverage on some of the big ticket races, we've got voter guides on our website. Here on the podcast, we're getting into why this moment in the election matters, and specifically how people in their 20s and 30s are playing into it. Utah is the youngest state in the country. The average age here is around 32. And this is a voting block that has an increasing amount of influence.
So, first up, in this episode, we'll answer this pretty straightforward question we got from a listener in San Pete County.
How exactly does Utah's GOP primary work? It's no secret that Utah is a red state. No Democrat has won a statewide race since the 90s. Shout out to Utah's first and only woman attorney general so far, the late Jan Graham. And redistricting has really limited Team Blue's chances for any of Utah's four congressional district seats.
And the Republican Party has a big footprint. There's at least 900,000 registered Republicans in Utah, the most of any voter group in the state by a wide margin. And it's worth noting that Utah Republicans hold a closed primary, meaning only registered Republicans are allowed to vote for GOP candidates in the June 25th election.
The fact is, if you become the GOP nominee in a statewide race, chances are high you'll coast to victory in the general. All this means is a primary election is probably the biggest hurdle a Republican faces in the state.
And what about the Democrats, Sean? Why aren't we talking about them?
Well, there are a few competitive primary races out there at the county level and in the state legislature for Democrats, but they're few and far between. Plus, Democrats already selected their nominees for the big races like governor and U.S. Senate. You'll see those names on the general election ballot in November and in State Street this fall, of course.
But let's get back to the first question. How does all of this primary stuff work? Again, it is June. For a lot of people, this time of year just doesn't really scream political engagement like November does.
June is a hard time.
That's Mallory Wheat. She's with Mormon Women for Ethical Government. It's a nonpartisan organization that encourages civic engagement.
It's kind of silly that we do it in June because school is out, families are on vacation, maybe there's not as much town halls happening, or like it's just a busy time because people are like they're off for the summer. They're not paying attention to politics. Politics is that'll be in the fall, right? So that makes it even more important to go out and vote in June because we have less of a turnout during our June primaries. So your vote counts for that much more.
Here in Utah, candidates have two paths to the primary.
First, there is signature gathering. That's where candidates or their proxies pound the pavement collecting support to get their names on the primary ballot.
The amount of signatures varies by the race. So like a governor will have to collect more signatures because that's a statewide race than someone running for like State House of Representatives will collect less signatures. And if they're able to get enough signatures, then they can get on the ballot as well.
Once the required number is collected, the lieutenant governor's office verifies that all the people who said, heck yeah, you should be on the primary ballot, are real voters. Bing, bang, boom, you're done, on the ballot.
But that isn't the fan favorite way to the nomination for some Republicans. They prefer the second way to get on the ballot, the almighty convention system.
This process is a little more drawn out. It all starts at your neighborhood caucus, also known as a precinct caucus. If you're a registered Republican, you show up at your caucus and you cast a vote for a county delegate. They're supposed to pledge to vote for the candidates your precinct wants them to.
They go to a county convention and the whole thing kind of levels up. Delegates at the county convention vote for the candidates they want on the ballot. After that, some delegates will go on to the statewide Republican nominating convention. And that happened this year in April. Mallory Wheat has been a delegate before.
I think it gets even crazier than the county convention. You're sitting in this big room and you're pretty much just there all day listening to people give speeches, and then you're voting, and then usually something is going to go wrong. And so it takes a long time to vote. They try to get the kinks worked out. But yeah, it's if you find a group of friends to go with, then I guess it's a fun time if you are into listening to candidates talk about their ideas all day, I guess.
That's where all the delegates vote on who they want to be the party nominee.
In order for a convention candidate to land on the primary ballot, they need to secure at least 40% of the delegate vote. And when there are many people vying for the nomination, this can take a long time, like multiple rounds of voting, and can get pretty heated. This year's convention lasted 17 hours. It started at 7 a.m. and ended at the stroke of midnight.
There are definitely the delegate favorites that get a lot of big applause. And then there are candidates that might get some boos.
Like Governor Spencer Cox.
I love you guys.
He did gather signatures, but that didn't stop him from trying to get the nod from delegates at convention. But the party chose Representative Phil Lyman as their candidate.
I would love your vote. I'm Phil Lyman, and I'm running for governor. And please, thank you again for coming. Thank you so much.
That's how we have two Republicans on the primary ballot for governor, and why other races have multiple people on the primary ballot, too.
We spoke with someone who was there at this year's statewide nominating convention, and she has some thoughts about how it feels to be a young person trying to make their way through this system.
We'll get to that right after the break. You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. Faith Hall is a student at Brigham Young University and a GOP delegate.
I met Faith at this year's state GOP convention. It was held at the Salt Palace in Salt Lake City in April. She's 23 years old, speaks four languages, and is considering becoming a social worker.
We met back up with her at BYU, and she's been politically engaged for quite some time.
I always felt like it was important. Ever since I was a kid, I can't really pinpoint a time when I didn't think politics were important, probably because it was something my family talked about. And as I got older, I wanted to be involved in them. And so when I was in high school, I took an AP government class. Mm-hmm. And our teacher encouraged us to learn about the caucus and convention process in Utah. And we were learning about it. So I ended up going to my caucus as a 17-year-old. And getting elected as a delegate because I was going to turn 18 by the time that the general election would happen. This was the election when Romney was running against Mike Kennedy. So I just got up and I said, I'm 17 and I'm trying to learn how to be politically active and I don't know what I'm doing, but I would like to go be a delegate. And they voted for me. I had to go against this other guy in my neighborhood that was like 60 and I won.
Describe to me what your view on politics are.
I have a lot of views on politics. Where do I start? So I am a Republican, but that doesn't mean you know everything that I think based off of me being a Republican. Although I will say that my values align pretty conservatively. Just my whole life, I've been extremely passionate about the right to life. Mm-hmm. And my position has become more nuanced as I've gotten older. like, you can't make blanket statements like abortion can never be allowed. I've realized that it's more complicated than that, but I'm still very passionate about being involved in how our society can make it as unneeded and infrequent as possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's my number one stance, is I believe that abortion is killing a child. I guess a lot of my political opinions center around family, because like, I'm going into social work, but I'm really passionate about protecting families. And so family values and parental rights and things like that, those are things I'm really passionate about. It's funny that I'm a social worker. Well, I'm going to be a social worker, right? Yeah. But it tends to be a more liberal field. I chose social work because I really want to help people. I'm a very compassionate person. Like I said, like, I want to protect children. I want to help mothers. I want to protect families. But I tend to really disagree on how to do that. And I think that economics and having a strong economy is the best way to promote well-being in families. Like, I actually grew up below the poverty line. And so I am a huge proponent for social programs. And I believe I would not be at this university. I would not be where I am if it weren't for social programs that have helped me there. But I also believe that our economy has taken a turn where we're becoming increasingly socialist in a way that is, it's debilitating people. So I believe in helping people, and I believe in compassion and love. And I think that the best way to do that is with a strong economy that is capitalist, but with appropriate regulations.
And so you kind of, you know, took that in, like those political views that you had, you brought them to kind of your neighborhood caucus, and then you brought them to convention. So could you just like maybe describe to me what your time being a delegate has been like?
The first time I was a delegate in 2018, I just went by myself, didn't know a single soul, hadn't really vetted candidates like I should have. So I was not prepared. And I really liked Mitt Romney. But it was interesting because I got to the convention and everyone was talking about how awful Mitt Romney was. They booed him off the stage and everything. And I just kind of looked around and everybody was telling me, don't vote for Mitt Romney, don't vote for him. So I ended up voting for Kennedy. I left that experience feeling pretty not proud of my performance. And I guess I wanted redemption this year. So this time around, I did a lot more work at vetting candidates. So I went to a lot of meet and greets. I met a lot of the senators. And it was interesting. I went to a panel at UVU's Lehigh campus of senatorial candidates. And after the panel, I wanted to go talk to them about their positions on abortion and their positions on Ukraine, because I'm half Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. And as a Republican that's half Ukrainian, that's kind of a difficult topic for me that I struggle to come up with a position for, because my family's there literally getting bombed. Like, actually, I'll call them and they'll be in their closet because they can't get to a bomb shelter in time, but it puts a wall between them and the outer wall in case an explosion happens nearby and breaks through their wall. It's crazy. But so I went and I was really nervous to talk to the candidates, but I decided, I mean, if there's any way I'm ever going to become confident enough to be really involved in the political process, I have to start shaking candidates' hands and things. So I went and I talked to Trent Staggs and Carolyn Fippen about their stances on abortion and on Ukraine. And it was awesome. So I felt a lot more confident going into this convention, although I hadn't done sufficient work figuring out a governor. And I'm kind of ashamed of that still. But there's always more years of conventions for me to do better.
How would you describe the energy in the Salt Palace this past time?
Okay, there, I have been reading the news articles that have talked about how the convention went. And it's so funny because I had such a different experience than what the main line is that has been fed about how the convention went. I had a great time. It was admittedly inefficient. The Utah Republican Party is kind of notorious for that. We were in lines for hours. It started so late. We got out at midnight, not because we finished everything, but because that's when the lease at the Salt Palace ended, which is just funny. Crazy. But people were really friendly. I loved that I got to go around and meet all the candidates again. Trent Staggs actually recognized me and knew my name. He was in the middle of giving a speech or like answering some questions. He had his microphone and he stopped. He saw me in the crowd, pointed at me, said, "Faith, I met you at UVU," and I felt so good in that moment. But that was awesome. And the people that I sat with in Salt Lake County, a lot of them were voting for different people, but we all just had great conversations about it. And I never felt shamed. I never felt pressured. This time I actually had my own opinion, so I wasn't pushed over. I had a great time. I will say I hate the booing, But that's not everybody. The booing was loud, but it was not most of the people there. And I really wish that culture could be changed in the conventions. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good positive energy, and I just felt really proud to be with all those people as a delegate fulfilling my civic duty.
What about the speeches?
Governor Cox's speech was probably the most memorable, and it's definitely been the one that's gotten the most media coverage afterwards, especially when he said, maybe you just hate that I don't hate enough. I'm going to be honest, I loved that line. Everybody else hated it, and it made me doubt myself, and I still don't know. Like, I kind of see what they were saying. Their governor just called them all haters. But he has since said he was speaking off the cuff, and he was addressing the booers, not the whole convention, right? But my point in being a delegate as a woman that's in social work and 23 years old, but with conservative values, was to have a different voice at the Republican convention, right? And I do feel like the Republican Party loses its young voters in kind of the impatient, frustrated, anti-snowflake hate rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Not saying, like, I'm not trying to call Republicans haters, but I really appreciated Governor Cox kind of pointing them out and being like, let's stop being haters and let's be compassionate. And I think that is an effective, I like Governor Cox for the way he reaches young people and that he's more into that kind of a rhetoric.
And that kind of leads in great to the next question is like, what do you think needs to be done to attract your generation to become politically active, especially in GOP politics?
That's a great question. I really hope we can do it because I've said this again and again, I have pretty conservative values and family values. And I think that our country will collapse as families collapse. And right now, my generation is very liberal and I think very much doing things that are going to contribute to the collapse of the family. And I'm very worried about that. And I know there are plenty of people like me out there that just don't talk about their opinions, that don't agree with all the trends that are happening in my age group right now. And they really need to say something. People feel like everybody agrees with abortion, or people feel like everybody agrees with like transgender surgeries before the age of 18 or things like that, you know? And we don't all agree with that. My generation doesn't all agree with it, but we're scared to talk. Mm-hmm. Young people can start being politically active by attending their caucuses, right? So that they can start meeting candidates, start realizing how real and in our faces politics is, if that makes sense. And how can the GOP get young people involved in the caucus system? It's really hard. Nobody even knew it was happening. Like nobody, I had one friend that mentioned to me one day, hey, are you gonna go caucus? It was probably a week and a half before the caucus actually happened. I hadn't even realized that in order to vote for my presidential candidate, I had to go to the caucus. I went on the Republican convention website and they said that they had spent more money than ever trying to spread the word about the caucus system this year. And it was a complete fail. They need to make an active effort to use Republican Party funds to get young Republicans on college campuses aware of the caucus system.
Do you think that the Utah GOP is kind of failing young voters?
I think that the fact that I was one of the only young people out of thousands of people at the convention says yes. But also maybe young voters are failing the GOP, right? I mean, it goes both ways. Are young people at all even making opinions? Because I have a lot of friends that say they're moderates. And I think that's a cop out because a moderate doesn't get to have a voice at all. I'd rather be a Republican that doesn't agree with everything Republicans stand for than a moderate that can't go to a caucus and can't vote and can't make their voices heard. So young people really need to realize that they have to take stances and that those stances can be nuanced and may not fully align with a party's agenda, but they need to be involved anyways. So that's the young people's responsibility. On the side of the Utah Republican Party, they have the responsibility to promote that kind of a mentality in our young people. And the messaging that most young people get right now is more these stupid snowflakes that don't know what they're talking about and we love Trump. You know, that's kind of the messaging that's coming from older generations of Republicans. That messaging has to change.
That was Faith Hall, a 23-year-old student at BYU and Republican delegate.
So we heard from Faith that she really wants more people her age to get involved at the ground level, like she is.
And she wants the Utah Republican Party to work on their messaging around how they engage with young voters. In the next couple of episodes, we're going to be diving deeper into how conservative voters in their 20s and 30s are feeling about this election, and how candidates and the GOP might need to adjust their strategies to get this generation on board.
Now, let's set the stage for what's happening this month.
Like we said, the whole reason we're here in your feeds right now is that this is an important moment for Utah's representation.
We're a deep red state. Democrats fight an uphill battle, and that means candidates who make it out of the GOP primary stage are probably going all the way. But surprises can happen.
Primary day is June 25th. Voters registered with the party might already have their ballots, and only registered Republicans will receive a GOP ballot.
KUER has also put together a handy-dandy voter guide for the GOP primaries for governor, Senate, House districts 1, 2, and 3, and attorney general. Check that out at KUER.org.
Also on our website, you can sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to answer your questions. What do you want to know about the primary voting process? There's a form for that, too.
That's it for this episode. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. The show's mastermind is executive producer Caroline Ballard.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark edit the podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks also to our digital team, Jim Hill, Eleanor Gomberg, and Raquel Davis.
You'll hear from us next week. Bye. And we're bringing the summer heat with some juicy election coverage.
That's hilarious.
From KUER.